Hello and welcome to episode number 47 of the AFTV Newscast, being recorded July 8th, 2016. My name is Elias Saba and I run AFTVnews.com, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. Got a lot of rooting news to talk about this week. New ROMs released. There's actually a new blocking guide, a new software blocking method that is actually very important. It actually is the first method that will allow you to block software updates on the device itself before you do the initial setup process. So, you know, it's something we've been wanting for a while, so that when people factory reset their device, they can actually get through that initial setup without inadvertently taking a software update. So we'll talk about that definitely in detail. I just put that up. It's very fresh. Talk a little bit about Prime Day. I'll definitely talk about what we've learned this week that'll help you when Prime Day actually launches on Tuesday on the 12th. Then we'll definitely be talking about some app news, and then, of course, going into the big Q&A section at the end of the episode. As always, I stream the podcast live on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. I encourage people to watch live. It's always fun to go back and forth over Twitter with people who are watching live. So let's go ahead and get right into it. All right, first up, RBox got back into the swing of things and finally figured out the issues revolving around TWRP custom recovery for the first gen Fire TV. For those who aren't aware, custom recovery is basically what you install onto a Fire TV, a rooted Fire TV device, so that you can basically install custom ROMs and basically modify the operating system safely without risk of, you know, bricking your device. If you have custom recovery installed, it's very rare that you can't actually recover from a messed up device or a bricked device. So it's really nice to see that RBox finally figured out the blooping, blinking issues that were revolving around TWRP custom recovery for the first gen Fire TV. The issues I'm talking about are the ones where certain TVs were incompatible with this TWRP released by RBox for the first gen Fire TV. People were getting looping issues where when they try to access TWRP, the device would just boot loop a few times. Or when they do get into TWRP, it would just kind of flicker and flash and it'd be completely unusable. Thankfully, the issue was not preventing people from actually getting into FireOS and using their device. It was just preventing them from getting into TWRP. And so, like I said, RBox was busy earlier for like the last month or so. I think he was out of town for a little while, he told me. But now that he's back and he finally got time to work on things again, he figured out what's going on. And so he released a brand new version of TWRP. I wrote about it fully and wrote about who needs to install it, who should be installing it. So definitely look at that guide if you have a first-gen rooted Fire TV. I'll, of course, put a link in the show notes so that you guys know what you're supposed to do and whether you should install this new version or not. So now that RBox figured out the issues with this TWRP, he was able to move on to creating the new pre-rooted ROMs using the latest 5.2.1.0 software update. Now, this is the software update, the second version of this software update. Remember, we talked about this a couple weeks ago where Amazon stopped the initial 5.2.1.0 software update rollout and then released an updated version, a revision to it. We're still not quite sure why Amazon stopped the initial release and released the revised version. There was an issue with the screensaver not turning on, and that could have been enough to cause them to release the revised version. But regardless, RBox has released the pre-rooted version for both the first-gen Fire TV and the second-gen Fire TV using this latest software version. So with this pre-rooted ROM, it basically means that owners of a rooted Fire TV can now update to the latest version without losing root. This does not allow non-rooted devices to gain root. That's not the purpose of this ROM. You have to already have a rooted device in order to install this ROM. But it is released. Definitely check my guide, of course, link in the show notes to where you can download the version and link to all the guides that I have. If you have the means, I definitely encourage you to donate to RBox because he is still supporting the older devices, the first-gen Fire TVs, and he's still releasing these pre-rooted ROMs every time a new software update is released. You know, they're a little bit slower these days. I mean, the guy's probably busier now than he was when he first started messing with the Fire TV. But, you know, without him, these rooted Fire TVs would basically be stuck on older software versions. And every time a new software update would be released, you'd be faced with the decision whether you wanted to keep root and stay on the old version or lose root and go to the newer version. But thankfully, with RBox's pre-rooted ROMs, you don't have to make that decision. You can basically best of both worlds, get all the newer features plus keep root. And so definitely I'll put a link down in the show notes directly to where you can donate to RBox to support him, to encourage him to keep this up. So definitely encourage you to donate if you can, if you have the means, but definitely don't feel bad if you don't have the ability to donate. All right, moving on to the new method for blocking software updates on a rooted Fire TV that I talked about at the beginning of the episode. This is a brand new method, and it has a very unique characteristic that I'll get into in full detail in a minute. But just to put it out there, I highly recommend everybody with a rooted first-gen or second-gen Fire TV, and probably even those with a rooted Fire TV stick, I highly recommend you guys follow this guide, even if you already have software updates blocked. This is a second guide and can work in conjunction with the existing rooted software update blocking method, you know, the PM space disable method that you guys are probably familiar with, and probably most of you who have rooted devices have already implemented that software blocking method. This is in addition to that. I was talking to Arbox basically, and he came up with this method and asked me if I can test it out to make sure it actually does work, because it was just a theory on his side. And I did test it, and sure enough, it does work very well. So this software update blocking method has you go into a rooted Fire TV and update a properties file that basically changes the OS software version of the Fire TV. And so the Fire TV then has a custom software version that you set. And so because of that, it has no way of knowing which software update it needs to download, if there is one even available. So basically, it makes the software updating process completely useless, because when it checks for updates, it has no idea what update it's supposed to download. So it just doesn't download anything. Now, the unique thing about this blocking method is that you can do it from within TWRP. This is the first blocking method that you can do from within TWRP. And the reason why that's important is because it means that if you factory reset your device, you can go into TWRP and implement this blocking method. And that way, when you go through the initial setup process on the Fire TV, because you just did a factory reset, software updates will already be blocked. This is the first blocking method that works during the initial setup process, meaning that if the Fire TV checks for updates during the initial setup process, it's not going to download an update. Previously, the only way to get through that initial setup process without taking a software update was to block software updates externally, either using a router that can block HTTPS requests or using a service like OpenDNS to basically redirect the update domains. But now this actually blocks on the device itself from within TWRP and actually works through the initial setup process. So that's why it's very important that you are aware of this, so that if in the future, if you have a rooted Fire TV and you do a factory reset, you absolutely should follow this guide right after basically you do the factory reset from within TWRP. So I've actually broken down this guide into two methods, one to do from within TWRP and one to do from within Fire OS. So obviously the from within TWRP method is used if you do perform a factory reset and you need to do those blocks before you do the initial setup, before you actually get into the Fire OS operating system. But if you're already in the Fire OS operating system and you're using your device, you already have updates blocked through the other method, I still highly recommend using the Fire OS method of this guide to add this second layer of blocking. I say use the Fire OS method because the TWRP method is a little longer, a little more tedious, whereas the Fire OS method lets you do it actually through ES File Explorer. So it's very straightforward. All you have to do is basically plug in a keyboard and a mouse into your Fire TV, launch ES File Explorer, go through a few steps, make one basically number change, and then you're done. And the Fire TV will no longer know which software version it's supposed to download, so it won't update anymore. All right, moving on. Next thing I wanted to very quickly talk about was this new guide that I put up about fixing a SD card access issue with rooted Fire TVs. By SD card, I don't mean the actual physical external SD card. I mean the actual slash SD card directory on the Fire TV. So basically, if you had a rooted device and you went in and went into SU mode, some devices were unable to actually access the slash SD card directory when they were in that SU mode. And so it actually has to do with the namespace settings within SuperSU. I won't get into the details of it, but basically the short of it is that if you are trying to access your slash SD card directory, either through a command line or through something like ES File Explorer, and you're not seeing the files on the slash SD card directory, most likely this issue is affecting you. The fix is very simple. You just have to download the zip file. It's linked in this guide, of course. And then basically just flash that zip file from within TWRP, and basically that's it. It fixes the issue and you're good to go. So I definitely just wanted to mention that for any of you out there who have rooted devices who might be running into this issue. All right, that's enough rooting device news. Let's move on to some app news. So this week we saw the release of three new HGTV apps and one new Food Network app. Both of those networks are actually owned by the same company, so that's why we saw these apps kind of released together. And these apps have one very unique characteristic that actually adds a new capability to apps on the Fire TV. And that capability is that these apps can actually sell you physical goods from Amazon.com directly through the app. You guys are probably familiar already with the banner ad that appears on the top of the home screen. Sometimes that actually advertises physical goods on Amazon. You can click through that, read up on something, and actually order it directly from the Fire TV. Apps themselves have not been able to do this, cannot actually trigger that, you know, purchasing process on the Fire TV that the banner ad uses. But now these apps are the first ones that actually can do that. So giving you a quick overview of how these apps work, and I'll talk about a little bit why this is actually important. I know a lot of you, you know, don't want to be sold things, don't want to be advertised to in this manner, but it's actually really important to talk about this and understand why it actually is a good thing on a monetization level for different app developers. So the apps themselves, when you launch them, they seem very normal, just like your any other video app. One thing you'll notice right off the bat, on the very bottom corner, you'll see there's a sponsored by and then a logo of a company. And of these four apps, they have Miracle-Gro, LG, Bose, and 3M as sponsors. And I'll get into why that is relevant in a second. But when you actually start a video, you'll notice that in the bottom left corner, while a video is playing, there's a little indicator in the bottom left corner that says view all products and actually shows an up arrow indicating to press the up button on the remote. Now, when you do that, it actually opens up a carousel of products that can be purchased directly from within this app. And the products within these apps are all from the sponsors. So for example, the HGTV gardening app is sponsored by Miracle-Gro. And so all the products that show up are from Miracle-Gro. The feature is very similar to the X-ray capability of the Fire TV. So when you're watching a video on Amazon, if you press the up button, you actually get that X-ray feature pop up and actually shows you actors and music and information about what you're watching. So this is very similar, where when you press the up button, it kind of brings up the same kind of carousel, and you can select things about the products and learn about them. And so if you select the product, it basically takes you into the standard checkout purchasing screen for the Fire TV. You're probably familiar with it if you've ever hit any of those banner buttons at the top. So that screen is nothing special. It's basically just the standard Fire TV purchasing interface. All right, so moving on to why I think this feature is important to be aware of. So for most apps, most video streaming apps, there are only a handful of ways where the developer or the content provider can basically monetize the app, can basically make money off of the app. You know, right off the top is a cable subscription where you have to actually activate the app that way. And so obviously they're getting money that way through a cable subscription. Apps like HBO Now and Showtime's app let you subscribe directly within the app. And so obviously that's a way for them to make money off of the app. And then you move into the streaming apps that don't actually directly ask you for money. And the most popular way, obviously, for apps like that to make money is to show you pre-roll ads. And so before you start watching a video that's for free, you actually have to sit through a 15, 30, or even 1 minute video ad to watch that. You know, obviously on YouTube, you see those all the time. Some other content providers, other apps will actually have pre-roll ads as well. So the ability for content providers to actually sell you products through their Fire TV app is a new monetization method that basically could replace pre-roll ads. So I don't know about you, but I personally would rather have control over the products I'm looking at and the ads and the purchases I potentially would make in an app like this, where I get to actually scroll through products and see if I'm interested and I want to learn more about them, as opposed to just being forced to learn more about them with a pre-roll ad. And so that's basically the idea behind this. And it's potentially a very powerful thing. Presumably Amazon and the content providers and even the sponsors are all kind of working in partnership for this feature, where when an item is sold, a piece of that sale is going through the content to the content provider and possibly to the actual sponsor. And so here you're looking at the video version. Bose sponsored this particular app. If you actually bought this speaker that's being advertised, the actual Food Network app that's advertising the speaker would probably get a kickback from that. So I have a feeling moving forward, we're gonna see this type of feature potentially built into the actual X-ray feature for the Amazon Fire TV, where if you're watching like a video through Amazon Video and that video has actually been, you know, cataloged, then, you know, potentially if the actor in the video is, say, using a cell phone, you can press the up button, and within that, you know, actor information, music information that you see in X-ray, you might actually see that cell phone appear, and you can click in, learn more about the cell phone if you want, and even make a purchase right there through the Fire TV. Now, I know, again, most people don't want any type of upselling or advertising or anything like this on their device, but, you know, if you're gonna consume free content, which all of these apps have free content, you know, the HDTV app and the Food Network app, the main ones, require you to activate the app with a cable subscription, whereas these apps do not require you to do that. They actually offer the content for free. I mean, granted, the content in these apps is actually not that great, so, you know, these are not great examples, but I have a feeling these are just kind of like a test run from these companies, from Amazon, because they are the first ones that are using this feature. But, you know, moving forward, I could definitely see bigger apps like HBO, potentially like Showtime, where they actually implement this feature to actually give you access to content for free in hopes that you end up actually purchasing some products here and there. So just wanted to mention it. I definitely think everybody who has a Fire TV should be aware of big features like this that kind of slip in, but are actually, you know, a pretty big deal. All right, the next bit of app news that I quickly wanted to mention is that the Turner Classic Movies app that actually appeared about 2 months ago and then disappeared after about a day is now back in the Amazon App Store. And so if you have a cable subscription, which this app does require, you can install this app, activate it, and get access to a lot of good content. Another app that actually disappeared and reappeared is also the Sling Player app. And also one other app is the Fight Network app. So these three apps actually appeared this week that were actually previously on the Fire TV's App Store, but for whatever reason disappeared. And so just wanted to let you guys know. Of course, I'll put a link in the show notes to all three of these apps. And next up, I want to talk about this new ability for Alexa on the Fire TV and all the Alexa-enabled speakers. You can now go into the Alexa settings on the Alexa app and actually select the default music library and music station service that you want your Fire TV Alexa or Amazon Echo Alexa to use when you actually request songs. And so you can, for example, change your library to Spotify instead of Amazon Music if you have a Spotify account. And so when you actually request a song from Alexa, you don't have to actually specify that you want the song to be played from Spotify. You could just request the song, and if you've set your default service to Spotify, for example, then that song will just play automatically from there. And of course, you can always request Amazon as the service if you want to go back to Amazon. Like I said, you can also set your station service. So Pandora is the option there. So if you want to play something other than a Prime station, you can actually say, you know, play radio station and then play, say, an artist name, and that will play from Pandora automatically, and you don't have to say specifically from Pandora or on Pandora like you had to before. So if you're interested in setting this option, look in the show notes. I've got screenshots of what parts of the Alexa app that you have to go in and change the setting. It is buried just a little bit, so it's not that clear where you're supposed to go for this. All right, moving on, I want to talk about Prime Day just a little bit. If hopefully you are listening to this before July 12th, you'll find this news helpful. So I mostly wanted to talk about Alexa exclusives for Prime Day. So those went live today, actually, and they're going to be live basically throughout until July 2nd on Prime Day. I definitely wanted to mention this only because these Alexa exclusives are technically for the Amazon Echo, the Echo Dot, and the Amazon Tap speakers, but it is actually possible to get in on these Alexa exclusives through the Fire TV. For those who don't know, these are products that can only be ordered through Alexa for the discounted price. Again, I won't go into what the actual items are just because I'm not sure when you'll be listening to this, but if you actually request to order these products through the Fire TV, it's kind of hit or miss whether Alexa will actually bring up the sale price or not. I was able to verify that you can actually get Alexa on the Fire TV to bring up the sale price, even though it is very difficult. And I can't really tell what causes it to bring up the sale price and what doesn't, because I basically use the exact same phrase, and sometimes I get the sale price, sometimes I don't. If you are interested in getting in on these Alexa exclusive deals and you don't have one of those Echo or Tap speakers and you only have the Fire TV with the voice remote or the Fire TV app that also allows you to issue Alexa commands, I definitely recommend you check out this post. I'll put a link, of course, in the show notes. It walks you through the best ways to actually ensure that you get these Alexa deals to come up on the Fire TV. One trick, for example, is that while you're requesting these deals from Alexa on the Fire TV, to have the actual Alexa app open, because when you actually make the request, the Alexa app will update and show you what you're requesting. And if the product comes up there but doesn't come up on the actual Fire TV, which sometimes does happen, if you add the item to your cart through the Alexa app, you still get that Alexa exclusive price when you check out on Amazon.com. So it's almost kind of like a little loophole where you can actually get the Alexa exclusive price by checking out on Amazon.com. You don't actually have to check out through the actual Alexa voice service. I also wanted to mention that part of the Alexa exclusive deals is that between now and Prime Day, when you place your first Alexa order, it doesn't have to be for those exclusive items. It could be for anything that Amazon sells. As long as you place the order through Alexa, you'll get $10 off an order of at least 20 or more. And so it's a pretty nice little savings. If you're looking to buy anything between now and July 12th on Prime Day, you should definitely consider doing it through Alexa to get that extra $10 off. Another savings that we learned about this week is that on Prime Day itself, if you have the Amazon Visa, this is not the Amazon store card. This is actually the Amazon Visa card. It's a different card. If you use that on Prime Day to make a purchase of $150 or more, you'll get $30 off pretty much automatically as long as you use the promo code VISA30 at checkout. So I'll put a link in the show notes to details on this deal to help you save just that little bit more on Prime Day. And the last specific thing I'll say about Prime Day is that Amazon has revealed four different sweepstakes that you can enter right now that are related to Prime Day. I wrote a little roundup of the sweepstakes and what you have to do, basically the easiest ways to enter them. The methods to enter are very simple. I mean, you can basically enter by just uploading a photo for one of them. You can enter by creating a shopping list on another one. Another one, you just have to click a button basically on a website. And so if you're interested in entering these sweepstakes, check out the link in the show notes, of course, to this post that walks you through the steps to quickly enter all of them and just be in the running. The prizes range from a $5,000 Amazon gift card, a $1,000 Amazon gift card, and various different trips around the U.S., trips to like Dallas and Los Angeles and other parts of California and that sort of stuff. So check that out if you're interested. And lastly, I will mention again that I will be covering Prime Day from basically all day, from midnight through the entire day, posting all of the best deals I can find at my little Prime Day hub. You can get to that at aftvnews.com/PrimeDay2016, you know, all one word, no spaces there. I've already got a whole bunch of posts posted there for deals that have already come up. I definitely recommend you check those out again if you are listening to this before July 12th, before Prime Day, because a lot of these deals, even though they've already passed, they're going to resurface on Prime Day itself. For example, here, if you're watching the video version, you can see this deal where you can get 3 free audiobooks and $10 to spend at Amazon completely for free, basically just for signing up for a free trial of Audible. And you can cancel basically before that free trial ends and basically just keep the $10 and keep the 3 audiobooks. And so that deal's already over, but it's going to come back on Prime Day itself. So if you missed out, you'll get a second chance there. So definitely check that out. And if you're a fan of the site, if you're a fan of the podcast, I definitely encourage you to check the site on Prime Day itself. I encourage you to shop through my website. I am a part of Amazon's affiliate program. I do get a kickback, and it's a great way for you to basically support my site and support me and support this podcast through basically your regular shopping. You know, you don't have to pay anything directly to me. You just do your shopping, you get your deals, and you know, I get supported through that. And so I really appreciate those who actually explicitly make a point to actually do that and to shop Prime Day through my website. All right, let's move on to the Q&A section of the episode. As always, I put a post up on Thursdays asking people to submit their questions for me to try to answer the best that I can here on the episode. And I've got some questions coming in from Twitter as well, so we'll go ahead and get right into it. The first question here is from HK Armor. He's saying, any downside to using one of those cheap Android boxes, several less than $40, he says, versus the Fire TV Stick? So I personally haven't used many of these cheaper Android boxes that come from, you know, usually these no-name Chinese manufacturers, but I have looked into them quite a bit, And for the most part, from what I could tell, the biggest downside is you don't tend to get support from the big names, you know, like Amazon, like Netflix, like HBO, like Showtime. You know, if you're using these devices for local content, they're usually fine for that because basically you're just using a local app. Nothing is actually streaming down from some big service. And usually the reason why these big services don't support these apps is because there's DRM involved. And so with Amazon, with Google, with Apple, you know, their hardware actually works in conjunction with these apps to make sure that the copy protection mechanisms, the DRM, is actually working and in place. And, you know, these big services need to make sure that their content is protected that way. And they can't really ensure that on these cheaper devices. I'm not saying all of these cheaper Android Chinese made boxes don't support these bigger services. Some of them do. You know, some of them have the actual official Google Play Store. And through that, you can actually get apps like Netflix and YouTube and HBO and that sort of stuff. But for the most part, that's kind of the biggest downside. Of course, the plus side is usually you get to save a little bit of money. With the Fire TV, not so much, because Amazon basically sells the Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick at cost. These Chinese manufactured boxes, Android boxes, don't tend to be that much cheaper. They're usually just a little bit cheaper than the Fire TV, but they usually are a lot cheaper if you're looking for that high-end hardware. So if you're looking at an Android box from some no-name manufacturer, it might have a, you know, really great specs for a decent price compared to something like the Nvidia Shield. So that's the biggest plus, is that there's the potential there to get extra, extra oomph for your money. You'll also tend to have less restrictions with what you could do with the device. You know, you could replace launchers, replace that sort of stuff. But oftentimes they don't have Android TV actually installed on them. They actually just have regular smartphone tablet versions of Android. So they're not that great for that, you know, couch experience. So that's another downside. So that's basically the rundown with most of these boxes. Plus side is they tend to be a little bit cheaper than the bigger brand name versions. But downside is the interface is not that great, and the app selection sometimes is a little bit more limited. All right, first question is from Big John. He's asking if I would consider installing a forum onto AFTV News. Absolutely, Big John. I have been wanting to do that for a long time. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you probably have heard me talk about a potential forum coming hopefully in the future. I haven't had time recently to work on it, but I'm definitely hoping in the next month or so to really hunker down and get that going. The biggest thing stopping me is I want to integrate it into the already existing comment system. I don't want to have two separate places for discussions on the website. I don't want there to be a discussion under a post in the comments and then also about the post in the actual forum. I'm trying to find a good way to link the two so that it's just seamless. You could post here, you could post there. It's the same account. Yeah, so no news on when it's going to really be released, but I'm hoping to work on it soon. All right, next question here from CD Lenford. He says, if someone like me likes the option of Firestarter and is also rooted, what's the best OS version to be on? I don't want to miss out on good features and bug performance improvements, but I'd also like to keep Firestarter up and running for now. Absolutely, the best software version for Firestarter is probably 5.0.5. That is the last software version that basically fully supports Firestarter, or at least, you know, Firestarter as we knew it, where it actually detects home button presses and actually can auto launch apps at the boot up process of the Fire TV. Starting with software version 5.0.5.1, that no longer had the ability to actually detect the double press of the home button. It could still detect the single press. But of course, with 5.0.5.1, you do have to be rooted to use Firestarter, because that version is the one that actually put Firestarter on that blacklist. So you have to go in with your rooting privileges and actually re-enable Firestarter. I'll put a link down in the show notes to that guide there. But absolutely, I recommend, if you want to use Firestarter the way it has always been, the latest software version that can use it to its full extent is 5.0.5. But, you know, like CD Lenford said, you are going to risk losing features and losing performance improvements if you stay on an older software version. I mean, right now, you know, the jump between 5.0.5 and 5.0.5.1 is very tiny. There's really no difference there. The jump from that version up to the latest version, 5.2.1.0, there are a few more features there, a few more improvements, but nothing too big. So you're probably fine right now staying on 5.0.5. But, you know, that the reason to give up on Firestarter and move forward is just going to get bigger and bigger as more software updates are released. So there's no reason not to update right now, but you might find later that you'll have reasons. All right, next question here is from Luthersman. He's saying, is there a way to permanently change the launcher on a Fire TV 1 or 2? On a rooted device, Arbox created these exposed modules that can actually achieve this. I don't know for sure if they're fully compatible with the latest software version. I know Arbox has been meaning to go in and basically update these mods and bring them up to date. I'll put a link down in the show notes, but that mod is the only way that I'm aware of to completely replace the default launcher. Basically, it disables the default launcher and lets you choose which app you want to launch as the launcher for the Fire TV. All right, next question from James. He says that Cody is no longer showing up on the recent section of his Fire TV 2, and he's wondering if it happened to anybody else. It does seem like other people are experiencing this recently. I have not figured out how widespread this is. It doesn't seem like the majority of people are experiencing this, but definitely a decent number of people, for whatever reason, are no longer seeing Cody show up in that recent menu when they used to have it. I don't know if this is just the same old problem that my guide about this addresses. I'll put a link down in the show notes on a guide that I've talked about multiple times on the podcast that has a whole bunch of different things you could try to make Cody reappear on that recent menu. It's very possible that, you know, everybody who is experiencing Cody removed from the recent menu has to do with these issues that we've known about for a very long time. Or it's possible that this is a new thing that is affecting newer devices, newer people who just recently got Cody to show up on the recent menu. So my suggestion, James, follow that guide, follow all the steps in that guide from the very top to the very bottom, and hopefully that will fix the issue. I'd love to hear back from people who do follow that guide and it doesn't fix the issue. Maybe I can work with you personally to figure out what exactly is causing this to maybe help other people out also. All right, next question from Tony. He says he's been delaying updating his pre-rooted FireOS 3 device to pre-rooted FireOS 5. He did have one question. He says he has a lot of apps installed that he has moved to external USB drives, and he's wondering if he can update to FireOS 5 without having to either lose those apps or reinstall those apps or move those apps back to internal storage. To that, Tony, I say, yeah, absolutely, you can jump up to FireOS 5, no problems with the apps already installed and the apps already on external storage. The transition should be perfectly fine from going from FireOS 3 to FireOS 5. The apps that you have installed, the settings you have installed, the apps that are installed on external storage, those should all transfer just fine without any issues there. All right, next question is from Rex. He's asking if you can hook up a webcam to a Fire TV and have a live teleconference with other people. This question comes up every now and then. The answer is no. I've seen people able to actually get a webcam to be recognized on a Fire TV device, but they have not been able to get that webcam to be actually recognized by an app like Skype or something like that. So basically the answer to that question is no. There's no way really to get a webcam working on a Fire TV. All right, next question from Jared. He's asking, is custom recovery still coming to the Fire TV stick? And he's wondering if Arbox has released any kind of updates or status updates regarding it. As far as I know, custom recovery and pre-rooted ROMs are still coming to the Fire TV stick from Arbox. I know he was waiting to basically figure out the issues revolving around TWRP for the Fire TV 1, which, like I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, he has finished figuring those out. And then the next thing he wanted to do was release those pre-rooted ROMs for the latest 5.2.1.0 software version, and he has now done that. And so basically there's nothing left on his plate, and so the next thing he's going to work on, if he does work on anything, it's going to be TWRP and pre-rooted ROMs for the Fire TV stick. He hasn't told me that he's given up on it or anything, so I presume he's still going to do it at some point. When that's going to be, I have no idea. And like I always say about these topics and about when Arbox is going to release things, I recommend people don't ask him, don't pester him. It's great that he's doing it. It's great that he's still planning to do it. It might be a few months from now. It might be a week from now. We don't know. And we really shouldn't ask, because that's kind of a little bit rude. And hopefully we'll see it released soon. All right, that'll conclude the 47th episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you those who are watching the video version on YouTube. If you are one of those, please hit that like button down below and please subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AFTVNews. Always appreciate those two things from those who watch the YouTube version. If you're watching the audio version, of course, I always put a link to the video version in the actual show notes at the very top. So if you're ever in a situation where you're about to listen to the audio version, but you can actually watch the video version, just check the show notes and click over to the video version. Enjoy it that way. But of course, still appreciate those who listen to the audio version. Like I said earlier, I always stream the episode live on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, and I welcome and encourage you to watch live if you can. But of course, the episode always goes up on Saturdays after the fact. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening if you're listening to the audio version, and I hope to see you next week.